Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Four!
Straight down the middle. It went straight down the middle.
Well, a very good evening and welcome to the Golf Show here on Love Sport Radio. Johnny Barrow, still off. He's going to be back next week. Jake Watson filling in for you this evening. And we have, though, still got our usual suspects on the show, don't we, this evening. We've got Tom. And Jeremy, where's Jeremy today?
Jeremy's in Scotland
today. There he is. There he is. Jeremy, good evening. How are you?
Good evening, all. I'm very well, very well. I'm on a coaching trip in Scotland, and I've just had the week in Lisbon, actually, as well. So I've spent the last 2 days in airports.
That's all right for some, isn't it? Go, eh?
Well, look, we appreciate you. You're still taking the time. If you can't be here in person, that you're still very much here, still on the golf show. So what I like most about this, because I am just filling in for Johnny this evening, is we do running orders here. We fill out what we're going to talk about over the course of the top, you know, of the hour. What I've got here as my top headline is, what have Tom and Jeremy been up to this week? This is what I like. What have Tom and Jeremy, other than Lisbon, was Lisbon business pleasure?
We're going to start with the big stories in golf, obviously. my task this week was I'm an ambassador for a thing called the World Corporate Golf Challenge, which is the oldest and the biggest corporate golf event in the world. And this was the world final. We had teams from 31 countries, all of whom were amateur pairs, all of whom had qualified in their own respective countries. And they came to play a two-round tournament at the Oitavos Hotel. And got on golf course, which was home of the European Tour Sixes just a few weeks ago. And my job is to host the whole event, do all the announcements, be the starter. I had my little Ivor Robson moment, do a golf show as well for them. And one of the greatest pleasures, actually, was interviewing the other ambassadors who were very interesting. We had Manuel Pinero, Spanish golfer, Ryder Cupper, played with Seve in the 80s. Ronan Rafferty, who was the youngest ever player to win the Order of Merit in 1989, also played Ryder Cup, and then Eddie Polland, who also played Ryder Cup in 1973, and his debut match was actually against Jack Nicklaus. So he was very interesting, and there were other sporting legends from other sports. We had Gareth Edwards there as well, and Mark Hughes of Manchester United fame. So it was a fantastic week.
And Jeremy, obviously last week I was getting ribbed for my pressure Topgolf moment where I didn't quite seize the opportunity to send myself and my friend to Vegas on an all-expenses-paid trip. Tell me what you got up to. I heard that I blew the chance to go to Vegas and you blew into a glass door. Is that correct?
I did. It was a bit of a pain. Ha, ha, ha.
Mr. Bump.
Yeah, look, I was on the Friday, I was due to present a private dinner and with the other ambassadors. And Manuel Pinero turned up a bit late, and he said, "I was upstairs, and I didn't realise that we were in this room." And I thought, "Oh well, maybe there's some other people who are up there." And there's a few people, chairs empty. Ran up through this door, well, literally not through this door. I never saw it. The Otavos Hotel, if you've ever been there, it's a beautiful hotel. There's unkempt natural area outside, and there's glass everywhere. So you get to feel like you're almost in nature, and the golf course is surrounding the hotel. It's a beautiful, modern design, really cool place. And, there was a room that I went through with a double door into the foyer, and I just didn't see it. And I went crash. So I went up perfectly in good health, and then I came back down with a big plaster on my face. And I didn't explain it to them either. So we did an hour presentation, and I never explained it. And at the end, people went, what happened with you? I thought you were being funny or something. I went, no. I nearly broke my nose. I mean, it was really stupid. But
do you remember the show, Jeremy?
Hang about. The important matter here, was the door all right?
The door was fine. I was lucky it didn't break. But, but I thought, why not put that all on social media? Because, you know, if you can't laugh at yourself,
then
there's something wrong with you. And it was funny in hindsight, but I could feel the blood running down my face, and I had a nice white shirt on and a tie and everything. I was thinking, oh, no, this is going to be completely disastrous. But anyway, it wasn't.
But like the consummate pro, Jeremy, the show went on.
The
and I hear
on.
It was a
yeah,
great success.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And how was Ronan Rafferty? Now, I played golf with Ronan Rafferty. I had the real pleasure of competing with him in a tournament at Walton Heath about 7 years ago, and he was just kind of getting himself into the pre-seniors tour, getting himself tournament sharp again. I remember him taking divots with drivers. He was hitting the ball so low and steep, obviously trained on the Scottish links courses. Did you watch him hit any shots, or was he just talking this time?
Well, he was a fantastic player, and he still does play really well. I didn't actually know he was on one of the tees with the hitting shots during play for some of the players in the sponsors and licensees tournament. But I got to talk with him, and he was part of the crew for the Q&A that we hosted, and he had a lovely story. We were talking actually about the Ryder Cup. That was the theme of it. And Eddie Polland went first, and he was talking about how in 1973 there was no team spirit at all, and he was a rookie, and he was made to feel really unwelcome, and they didn't hide him at all. They put him in the first group. He played against Jack Nicklaus, and they hardly played him again. And Bernard Hunt was the captain, and it wasn't very nice. And Manuel Pinera said exactly the same thing about the '81 Ryder Cup, which was held at Walton Heath, and that was one of the strongest European American sides ever. And I asked them what the difference was, and they said the difference literally was Tony Jacklin. And Ronan said exactly the same. And he said they came in and he made them feel $1 million. And Tony was our ambassador 3 or 4 years ago and did a wonderful Q&A, and I was lucky enough to host that as well. And he was fascinating. He talked about how the whole thing needed professionalizing. The players needed to be treated with respect so that they get the best out of them. And he's a fascinating guy and a really great interviewee.
Yeah, I bet he wasn't.
He changed European golf twice. Once as a player when he showed everybody that you could beat the Americans. He won 2 majors himself. And then again as a Ryder Cup captain. And he had the players then. And obviously, Seve came along and in partnership with Jack Nicklaus also was the one that suggested that the European players take part in it. And so we talked about all things Ryder Cup, and they were absolutely brilliant. We even got Gareth Edwards in onto the act, because what you might not know, in 2010, Gareth Edwards was captain of Celtic Manor, and Monty invited him in for a team talk to the European team room. And Gareth was going, what the hell can I talk about? And so he talked about the Lions tour in 1971 to South Africa, which was famous for the sort of 99 all-in call. And there was one moment in the team talks when somebody was saying, well, when it all kicks off, am I going to see the whites of your eyes because you're coming to help me, or am I going to see the numbers on your back? And that was like a real bonding moment. And he told that story to the Ryder Cup team, and Martin Keimer came up to him afterwards and said, Gareth, I know absolutely nothing about rugby, but I really understood that. And so Gareth was a great motivator, great team man, obviously played loads for Wales and 10 British Lions appearances as well. So he was wonderful to have, and he loves his golf too.
Oh, brilliant. I mean, that's quite a nice segue into Ryder Cup here, because I've got myself a pretty cool Ryder Cup story from last week, Jeremy.
Well, I saw the photos on social media, so yeah, you can't, I think, yours is an amazing story.
Oh, well, I tell you what, I've met the GOAT. Now, I know that this is in question. Is Tiger Woods the GOAT? Is Jack Nicklaus the GOAT? For me, it's Jack. He still has the most amount of major championships, 18 to Tiger's 15.
The way I look at that, I think you're right. What I would say is Nicklaus never played like Woods played. So Tiger's played the best golf anybody's ever seen. When he had all 4 majors and he was winning them by 15 and 9 and whatever, he's played the best golf, but he doesn't have the best record. So Jack Nicklaus is the greatest professional golfer of all time.
And Tiger's still going. He's still alive. He's not playing many tournaments because he's got to keep the back nice and healthy, but he's still alive and he has a chance. But midway through last week, I was doing my usual teaching week, very busy over at the Stoke Park Teaching Academy, and then I get a phone call from a client of mine who's a Wentworth member, and he said, Tom, would you like to join me for dinner on Saturday night? I thought it was a very generous offer, and I said, where are we going? And he said, well, the dinner is at Wentworth, and it's the 50th anniversary of Concession, and Jack Nicklaus and Tony Jacklin are going to be there. So in all of 1 second, I said, yes, I will be there. Thank you for the invitation. So I got to meet Jack Nicklaus on Saturday night, which for a golf pro or for any golf fan is just the Pelé of football. It's, or who is it for you,
first,
Jack?
Well, Jamie Vardy.
Jamie Vardy. Leicester fan.
Well, sorry, just being honest. That's your first time you'd met Jack before. Oh, but there's, they always say that, no. never meet your heroes.
I know, and I walked
what
into
was it
the
like?
Room.
What was it like?
And I walk into the room, and there's 100 people in there, champagne reception. I'm just there for dinner, but they've been there all day, having a massive charity day, which they raised hundreds of thousands for. I mean, these two names are going to draw the right people.
Of course.
I walk into the room, and I see him over in the corner with his wife, Barbara, and with a couple of important people. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to make a beeline for Jack right now. I must have a photograph and I must shake his hand. So I went over and I said, Mr. Nicholas, very nice to meet you. My name's Tom Reed. I'm a golf professional. Would it be okay if I had a photograph with you? And he turned around to me and said, you have a familiar face. And I looked at him. Obviously, I'd had a glass of champagne on an empty stomach. And I turned right round to him and said, so do you. And he chuckled and he said, good for you. And I shook his hand. He put his arm around me and we had a photograph. Yeah. And that photograph is going to pride a place at home, probably above the fireplace if my girlfriend lets me. But no, it was an amazing. And you know, the whole never meet your hero thing this time round. I mean, he was a true gentleman. And, you know, it was a 50th anniversary of Concession. And Concession was, it came about in the 1969 Ryder Cup. And at the time, the US were dominating GB and I at the time heavily in Ryder Cup. Sam Snead was the captain. He was furious that Jack did what he did. But basically, they're coming down the last hole and the match has been retained. So it's 16-16 or 15, you know, 16 and a half at the time. And Jack and Tony are all square coming down the last. Jack misses his birdie putt. Tony misses his birdie putt. Jack knocks his 6 foot past the hole, holds the putt coming back under all that pressure. Mm. So Tony's got a putt basically to halve the match and have the US retain the cup. Or he misses it and they lose it. Either way, the trophy's going back to the US. And Jack Nicklaus turned around to him and he said, I know you wouldn't miss it, but I didn't want to give you the opportunity to. And he handed him his ball marker. And it was the most gentlemanly act of sportsmanship. And it made a huge impact in the Ryder Cup. And obviously, Tony Jacklin was a lot younger than Nicklaus at the time. He'd just become a major champion. He was the darling of British golf. And, you know, he's walking down the 16th hole and he turns to Jack and he says to Jack, are you okay? And Jack says, yeah, how are you? And Tony says, to be honest with you, Jack, I'm petrified. And Jack said, well, if it makes you feel any better, I am too.
Yeah.
And Jack Nicklaus is a true gentleman of the game. And that goes down in history as Concession. And this was the 50th anniversary. And they marked that by, you know, putting together three foundations, combining their skills, resources and knowledge and inviting a lot of high net worth individuals to come along and raise money for these causes. And they stood up on the stage, Jack and Tony. They were interviewed by Dan Walker. And Dan Walker's a huge golf nut, as I'm sure you guys know. And Dan, you know, he asked all the right questions, but Jack Nicklaus continued to move the conversation back to other people. He was so knowledgeable about all of the golfers who are in current form, the young golfers coming out on tour. Mm. He sends them a personal tweet, well, not a personal, a public tweet, saying to them, congratulations on your victory every single week. And that tweet would mean the world to
any golfer.
Absolutely,
of course it would, yeah.
And he's that classy that he does that. And he said, just at the end of the Q&A, they were about to wrap up and we were going to get stuck into the dinner and the auction. And he said, I just want everyone to just hold up and I want to tell you about the reason why I have put our charity forward for today. And he told a story about a young girl that was born with half a heart. And it was a tragic story. And as he told the story, he was crying. I mean, tears were streaming down his face. And you could see how much it meant to him. And he said, after this tragic story of the young girl that passed with only half a heart, he said to his wife, Barbara, if we ever have the opportunity to help people, and we're lucky enough in our life to do that, we will help children. And he stood up there and obviously rapturous applause followed. It was insightful. It was heartfelt. And it was truly the most amazing evening I've had. And I feel truly honoured to go.
So you two have had a pretty good week then.
That's for sure.
Pretty good week.
That is for sure.
OK, well, look, Jeremy's going to stay on the phone for a little while longer. In a few moments, when we come back, we're going to talk about the Irish Open. Look back at that.
Love Sport.
Yeah, welcome back. It's the Golf Show here on Love Sport Radio. Jake Watson in for Johnny Burrow this evening. I've got Tom Reed, as always, in the studio. Jeremy, Dale has been ever so kind to stay on the phone for us while we continue to discuss some of the big stories from the past week. But later on the show as well, we will look ahead. But we're going to start, aren't we, with the Irish Open. Tom, a couple of huge stories coming from that one.
Absolutely. I mean, it was Open Championship-esque. I mean, there was 50,000 people there. It was in the old traditional town in Lahinch, which is, you know, as known as or described as the St. Andrews of Ireland. And it's a very traditional course. First time it's ever hosted the Irish Open. And, you know, there were some fantastic crowds. And there's something about Ireland that brings John Ram, or Rambo, as he's known, to form. He's won two out of the last 3 years, 67, 71, 65, and then he smashed the field with a 62 in the final round with a 31 on the back nine.
It's all right.
Not bad. Not bad.
It's all right.
What's crazy about Ram is his fourth time that he's won on tour. He's ranked at the currently he's ranked sixth in the world. He was ranked number two at one point.
Yeah.
And he's only 24 years old.
Yeah. No, I didn't realise how young he was either, which is, yeah, that's, again, quite scary.
Yeah, it really is. And we're going to go on and talk about the 3M Open that was just hosted in Minnesota this week as well. And that's going to be even scarier because top three players are, you know, under the age of 23. So, you know, he comes in there, four birdies, one eagle, coming back there and a two-shot victory. And, you know, going into the final round, he's five shots back. So it's an outstanding performance. And John Rahm has been kind of dubbed as this links course specialist and two wins on links courses now, heading into the Irish Open, into a place that he's very familiar with. I think he's going to be a very strong contender for the Open Championship.
You'll have to forgive my ignorance somewhat. A links course, what is it?
Well, a links course is a golf course that's by the ocean. And generally a golf course that is quite barren, not a lot of trees, but very thick rough, natural dunes, very deep pot bunkers. So links courses are generally a lot harder with bad weather.
Okay.
They can yield good scores on good, still, calm days, but they do rely on a certain amount of wind to make them tricky. Jeremy, you're a huge fan of links.
I mean, links is it's link land, as they called it in Scotland. It used to be under the ocean, and it's sand-based, and it links the arable land of the farms to the water. And generally speaking, it produces natural sand dunes, as you might imagine, of course, but good, firm, draining turf. And when golf was growing up in Scotland 200 years ago, 150 years ago, it was land that the sheep would eat all the grass, and that's how they got the grass down so they could play. And it was land that couldn't really be used for anything else. And the hazards sort of grew out of places where the ball used to land, the divots, and then the sheep would shelter in the depressions. And so the courses developed sort of organically, certainly at St Andrews as well. And the hazards then also were in places where the balls went. So they weren't sort of to the side like you see on very many modern parkland courses, but they were more central hazards, so that you had to avoid. They would catch a nearly good shot, and that was kind of the idea, and that's the genius really of the old course at St Andrews, is that the hazards aren't to the side as you might imagine a standard sort of American parkland course. So it creates a very different challenge, and I always think, I mean, the reason why people come from all over the world to play the Great Links courses of the British Isles is because the game is more interesting when the ball does something, when it lands on the turf. And with this sandy base, you get firm conditions, and that's exactly what you get. And it's great turf to play from. The conditions aren't always perfect, but they're perfect for golf because they create this interest, and you can run the ball up, and you have to create a shot that fits the situation. Whereas in America this week, particularly at 3M Open, you saw what I would call, what John Hagen has called, a Scottish journalist, splat golf, where you simply land the ball on the green and it stops exactly where it lands and there's no wind. And it's a much less interesting and exciting game to play and not as good to watch either, in my view. So the Lynx is an amazing course, designed originally by old Tom Morris. Then 1927, Alistair McKenzie redesigned it. And for those of you who don't know, Alistair McKenzie designed Augusta National as well as Cypress Point and Royal Melbourne and many other courses, and is highly regarded as the greatest golf architect that ever lived. And in 1999, Martin Hawtrey restored it because it had lost a lot of the old Alistair McKenzie features. So they've renovated it and brought back his original design. It was great to see how also they set it up. Although they've had a lot of rain, it was much greener than it should have really been for classic links, but it was good enough. Interesting contours around the greens, great bunkering. And also what you see with that, and less rough than you might normally get at an American Tour event. And it produces a tournament where everybody could compete. If you look at the top of the leaderboard, you've got Eddie Pepperell and Robert Rock and Cabrera Bello as well.
I'm going to stop you there at Robert Rock, Jeremy, because Robert Rock, obviously, like you say, a little softer than normal, rough down a touch. He pops in a 60 in third round Saturday. Fantastic. He had a putt for a 59 on the last. That was an incredible
round. He didn't really
round.
Know either.
Yeah, he didn't know,
quite.
Did he? Had no idea. Is that a good or a bad thing, though?
He was in the zone. And in his interview, he said, I knew that I was doing all right. He said, but because I hold so many silly putts, 50 foot, 40 foot, you hold like a 60 footer on 17.
I kind of don't believe he wouldn't know.
I don't know.
Because if you're shooting a 60, you don't do that very often.
Absolutely not. Unlikely to do it again.
So in the back of your mind, you're thinking, this is a really good round.
Yeah, and he said, you know, I wasn't too sure. I said, I knew it was about 8 under, but because I'd hold so many long ones, I wasn't quite sure. He said, they felt like freebies, so I just kept playing. And he said to his caddy on 18, does this putt mean something? And he said, 2 putts will do, Robert.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was him saying, listen, we're leading one of the Rolex Series events on the European Tour. 2 putts puts you 2 ahead going into the final round. Let's just get the job done, because Robert's not had great form. And he's not had a great season. But his focus is split now. He's a European Tour player. But prior to that, he was a PGA instructor, the same as myself and Jeremy. And he worked at a golf club in the Midlands and was a pretty tidy player, obviously. And found his way through to the BMW Championship at Wentworth through qualification through the region. He then popped in a top 10 finish, which was just incredible, given the fact he'd never been out on that scene. And that's how he got his status.
He's clearly got the game. Clearly. So why has it just not maybe happened previously before? I mean, you can understand why somebody would go into coaching, because you know that I can imagine the tour is a completely different world, isn't it? Particularly if you're not you know winning regularly, or you know, do you know what I mean? I can understand why people would go against it, but clearly when he has that kind of game, why has it not happened more for him earlier in his career?
It's a tricky one with Rocky. I mean, he has one of the most beautiful and technically stunning golf swings that you'll ever see. And obviously, he's kind of a king of the swing in his own way. He knows a lot about the swing. And he's coaching Matt Wallace. And Matt Wallace is probably one of the hottest golfers on the tour at the moment.
Yeah.
He's just been bumped at the top of the race to Dubai by John Ram after his win last week. But, you know, not only is he competing at this level still, you know, nearly winning the Irish Open this week, but he's coaching a guy that's winning multiple events on the tour. He's an incredibly impressive professional.
Yeah, no, I find that absolutely unbelievable. It's absolutely crazy. I mean, is there anyone else of note that he's perhaps coached over the years other than Matt?
Yes, I mean, he coached me for about 5 minutes.
No, I'm only kidding. Anyone of note, I said.
No, he gave me some help a little while ago, which was greatly appreciated. But no, he's worked with Darren Clark and Thomas Bjorn and a lot of other guys who are kind of on the fringes of making their way onto the tour. But what he's also done is he's worked with PGA professionals like myself and Jeremy, and he's trained them up to become instructors, and he's brought them out onto the tour to work with tour players. Mm. So he's genuinely a very giving guy. And, you know, he's done some wonderful things. And I was really pleased to see him at the top of the leaderboard. I'd love to see him finish it off. But John Ram's round of golf there won the tournament. Robert Rock was in a good position to win. He played a good final round. But Ram going in there with the idea with 62, 2 off Robert Rock's course record, that's job done. And John Ram, it's not a surprise to see him win again. Like I say, you know, he's already done 8 victories or had 8 victories on tour. He was world number one in amateur golf for 60 straight weeks, which is an amazing feat. So he was always, you know, he was always going to be the guy that was going to become the next superstar on tour. He's played in a Ryder Cup at Le Golf National last year. But other notables as well. I mean, Andy Sullivan back in form. One of the nicest characters on the tour. He gives some pretty honest and amusing interviews. He's pretty great on Instagram as well. He's quite happy to video himself in the pub in the evenings with his pals rather than what he's doing in the gym prior to his tournaments. That was another great one. And obviously Paul McGinley, one of the more famous...
legends.
Legend, absolutely. And an ex-Ryder Cup captain. You know, he wanted to create a festival-like atmosphere at La Hinch. And, you know, they had 12 of the top 50 players in the world. They had concerts on Thursday, Friday and Saturday night. It was a hugely successful area. And on top of that, McGinley got enough money through the charity and through the event to get enough money to supply a local school with a multi-sport AstroTurf area. So not only did they host the event in the local town of La Hinch, they also gave back to it, which I think is a fantastic
event. Absolutely, of course it is.
It's one of the other clever things they did, actually, was they had multiple entries in and out of the competition. So on one ticket, you didn't have to stay in. If you left, then you could also come back into the event. And as you said, the live music in the town. The town is right. The golf course is right in the town, just like St Andrews. And also, you see that at North Berwick as well. So hats off. And McGinley won an amateur tournament down there and really loves La Hinch. And it's proved to be a stroke of genius. It was a fantastic tournament and a great preview. Genius also in the scheduling. Great to have it 2 weeks before the Open Championship at Port Rice. Fantastic.
Chaps, just one more on our winner from the Irish Open before we move on. What is it about John's game then that has made him, you know, a specialist in this form. Because you say it's so much harder. You don't win that many tournaments across a year. For him to now have won it on more than one occasion, there's clearly something, isn't it, about his game that suits this type.
What I would say is that given how he plays with a slightly shut club face his impact has his hands leading quite a lot, it would be quite easy for him to hit the ball low and flight it down. And he can also hit the ball up in the air as well. He's tremendously powerful. And I would say those are the things that would help him. I mean, at Leinster it was fine, but at Port Stewart it really wasn't. It was really quite windy. So I would say that given that his hands lead the club head at impact quite a lot, the low shot would be quite a good one for him, and that's the shot you need when the wind blows, and also you need to run the ball up onto some of these greens as well.
And also, Jeremy,
the conditions allow you to do that.
It's interesting as well with John Rahm, because you're absolutely right in what you say. He's able to compress the ball beautifully and knock balls down, work it from left to right, work it from right to left. But he also had second place finish at Valderrama. And he's also won on what we describe as splat golf courses before. You know, he can win on every golf course. And that's why you don't get to world number one amateur golf for 60 weeks for no reason. You know, the 8 tournaments already in the title, he's won on every style of golf course already.
And he's had good form as well, hasn't he? Third, second and first in his last 3 tournaments.
Well, top stuff. Okay then, well, that's your Irish Open review.
This is Love Sport.
Yeah, welcome back. Golf show here on Love Sport. Jake Watson in for Johnny Burrow. I'm just going to update you from some of these Wimbledon games from earlier on today. There is still action going on, but what I can tell you with regards to the results, number one seed Ash Barty is out. She went in 3 sets earlier on, but Serena Williams, she is through. Of course, lots of Americans, isn't there? Coco Gauff, though, she is out. Simona Halep, former world number one, knocked her out in straight sets. But great news for the women that we still have someone in the singles. Joe Konta beat Petra Kvitova in 3 sets earlier on today. In the men's, we have just seen Roger Federer absolutely demolish Berrettini, 6-1, 6-2, 6-2. Kaina Shikori against Kukushkin is ongoing. That's going into 5 sets. Novak Djokovic went through with relative ease in 3 sets earlier on today. Sam Querrey, he went through in 4. And also Rafa Nadal went through in straight sets. As I said, a couple of games going on at the moment. Milos Raonic against Guido Pella is also going on at the moment. That's also gone into a 5th set. So I'll update you as and when we have a result in that one. But guys, let's talk about the 3M Open in Minnesota. We were talking earlier about John Rahm and how almost incredible it was for what he'd achieved with regards to his age, just being 24. But as far as the 3M Open in Minnesota goes, Matt Wolf... That is as big, if not bigger, a story with regards to his age.
I mean, it's an amazing story.
It's special.
And these post-college pros are coming out and they're becoming the main story on the PGA Tour. They're coming out as ready-wrapped PGA Tour professionals. And Matt Wolf was quoted as saying, "I'm not scared of anyone and I just want to win." And he's got Bryson DeChambeau. And by Matt Wolf's standards, Bryson DeChambeau is a veteran. Okay, only a few years on tour. But compared to Matt Wolf, he's a veteran. Mm. And, you know, Matt Wolf's just come out of college. He was a world number one amateur. He was an NCAA champion. And he's only the 7th player in the last 80 years to win a PGA Tour event before the age of 21 with an NCAA to his title. The others are Tiger Woods, Seve Ballesteros, Phil Mickelson, Ray Floyd and Jordan Spieth. And that is
not bad company.
That is the company that you want to be in.
Absolutely.
He seems to be set for stardom. And what I love about him as well is that he's got an unusual style to his swing. And I would call it style because it's hugely effective. He's very powerful. An ex-baseball player coached by George Gankas, GG Swing Tips, as he's known on his social media handles. And his skill outweighs style in this sense. You know, he's got a very unusual funky look to his backswing, but he exhibits all of the best delivery positions of the best players in the world. So he gets it back into the zone just where he needs to at impact. And you know, it was an outstanding performance. He comes in here, it's his 4th start on the PGA Tour and he's 3rd as a professional, and he's already you know, he's gained himself exemption up until the end of the 2021 season. And he's coming down the stretch and he's playing actually with his old junior buddy called Colin Morikawa. I mean, that, bearing in mind 2 years ago they were both juniors. Growing up in South California, playing junior golf together, Colin was an unbelievable player. And if you look at Colin's round of golf, he's playing alongside Matt Wolf in that final group. He shoots a 30 on the back nine, 6 under par with no bogeys. Okay, this guy, you know, he's 21 years old and he's playing with Matt, who's 20 years old. Matt Wolf then answers to that with a matching 31 and an eagle on the last. Mm. Bryson DeChambeau is ahead of him.
He also eagled the last as well, didn't he? And Bryson was in before him. It also had a 6-footer for an eagle as well. Made that, and Matthew Wolff followed him in. I thought it was amazing.
You think that would have actually put some pressure on him, Jeremy? But seemingly he answered with an eagle of his own.
Yeah.
Bryson DeChambeau spears a 6-iron in from 200 yards to 6 feet, knocks it in for eagle, goes one ahead, and there Matt Wolff sits in the back of the fairway thinking, I need birdie to get into a playoff here. And he puts it to 26 feet left of the pin and holds the putt for eagle and closes Bryson DeChambeau out. And I mean, the look on Bryson's face was a picture, Jeremy, wasn't it?
It was. And I have to say, it pleased me no end that Matt Wolff won, because I think he's a much better watch than Bryson. I love unusual swings, and this is really one. Although, we should say, I mean, this sort of thing has happened before. Phil Mickelson won a tour event as an amateur, the Phoenix Open, as a very young man, and so this sort of thing isn't totally unknown. Also, I've seen swings like this before. I mean, there's an Irish Walker Cup player in the 50s called Jimmy Bruin, who had exactly the same top of the backswing position as Matt Wolff. Miller Barber was very similar, a very funky takeaway and a loopy swing. But they did what all great players do. They got it back to the ball, and I really like that. I also like the interesting sort of body waggle that he has at the beginning of his swing. So he kind of stays in motion and almost makes the start of his swing like a reaction rather than a completely static.
It's quite a nice trigger, isn't it, Jeremy? A hip wiggle trigger.
So he's kind of the new Jim Furyk, and you're right. George Gankus is teaching clubhead speed above all else. And I was going to say, you know, Matt is a bit like a Jim Furyk, but with speed. I mean, I think in a few years' time, we won't even be talking about his swing. You know how when Jim Furyk came out, you know, his swing was compared to an octopus falling out of a tree, and everybody was talking about it.
He didn't take to that too kindly, if I remember, Jeremy.
No, but he was. But now nobody mentions it.
No. With $45 million on the career money list, I think he's answered those critics. No,
well, exactly. I mean, and I think this guy will do the same. He's got his. If he's become this good, there's absolutely no reason for him to change it. And Monty did exactly the same. Again, different type of player, but the same principle applies. And I once met Paul McGinley, who described Monty as someone who'd done it all right, because he likened learning the swing to, or learning to play golf, like climbing a tree. If you go out on a branch, you have to come back again to get up the trunk. Monty had just stayed climbing the trunk and not deviated and stuck to his game. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. Otherwise, you have to think too much. It's too hard work. And you don't get to own your swing in a way that these guys seem to do. And I think it's very refreshing. I don't like the distance they hit the ball. That's down to the equipment in part, but also they are these young guys are even longer. The R&A report at the beginning of the year told us exactly that. The longest players were on the web.com tour, and so it's proving they really are hitting it miles, and there's no end, it seems, in sight to the distance that the ball goes. But that's a slightly sort of negative subject to get onto. This was an amazing performance, no doubt about it. But we've seen things like this before.
Yeah, well, 20 years old, I mean, taking absolutely nothing away from it, because it is incredibly young. But it's not too uncommon, say, in other sports, to see people, you know, competing at the very, very, very top level, still very much as teenagers. But that's incredibly rare, though, isn't it, in golf to be winning an event, you know, as a teenager. Why do you think that is?
I think that, you know, that the system now, the college system is fantastic for players.
So you see that they just turn pro so much later, perhaps?
Well, indeed. And Matt Wolff was so dominant on the collegiate circuit that he was only halfway through his degree. He's dropped out of college, as did Tiger, as did Fitzpatrick and many others. It's not an uncommon thing.
Okay.
He went to Oklahoma State, which seems to have bred some of the most unbelievable players. We've got Charles Howell III, Ricky Fowler, Hunter Mahan, Peter Uhrhein, Alexander Noren, Bob Tway. I mean, there's some unbelievable players that have come from Oklahoma. Mm. So there's something. It must be something in the water up there. But he's finished college. He's ready to go. He's one of the hottest properties in golf, and now even more so. And, you know, as going off what Jeremy said, he needs to just stick to his guns, because what he has works. And if he's mentally tough, he won't listen to everyone, because everyone's going to be coming after him.
Yeah.
Matt, I can help you with the swing. Matt, I can make it better. Matt, I can make it more consistent. Have this sponsorship. So he's going to need a really strong team around him. And if he does so, I think that, I mean, at 20 years old, winning a tournament at 21 under, holding off DeChambeau, top 10 player in the world with an eagle on the last. That is an impressive victory. This will be no flash in the pan. And actually looking way ahead now, I'm probably getting overexcited here, but I think he's going to be a pretty intimidating guy to play against in the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, Jeremy, would you agree with that?
Oh, very much. Yeah, yeah. No, huge, huge asset for the Americans. And although we've got a bit of golf to play before we get there.
So, would it be kind of beyond the realms of possibility to say that there are other players, almost of similar level, still playing in the college area, who could, at the very least, turn pro and be competing with the very best in the world?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big gamble, isn't it? You know,
because you wouldn't get that in any other sport, I don't think. You see it actually very, very rarely every now and again with boxing at the moment. An amateur, for whatever reason, turns pro incredibly late. But yeah, it feels... I like the thought that there's all these unearthed people that we have no idea about yet. And the second they turn pro, or they turn an event, they can compete with the very best.
It's definitely
well, we've just seen it in the tennis, haven't we?
Yeah, well, exactly. When someone comes out of nowhere, it's exciting to know that this talent exists.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, for Matt, maybe it's a gamble for him. But like I say, he was so dominant on the collegiate scene that I'm sure that his coach was like, listen, you got two more
people
years
knew,
here.
People knew.
He's probably getting offered some pretty decent contracts as well, I would imagine. Yeah. He's wearing all the gear. You can see him fully kitted out. I mean, that's been in operation for a little while. But I mean, he's jumped 1,524 places in the world rankings to 135. So after three events as a pro, he's at 135 in the world. And once he breaks into the top 100, he's then exempt for the major championships. Yeah. He's now exempt for the Masters next year through having this victory. It's a very quick rise to the top of the game.
And again, for someone who's so fresh into it, having that security of knowing now that those places secured, it means he can just concentrate on his game, doesn't it?
Absolutely right. You know, he's good to go now. He can actually put a schedule in place, whereas at the start, he's relying on sponsors' invitations.
Absolutely.
And he's just trying to make as much money as he can in events to secure his card for the following season. But a player that we should mention on that subject as well is Victor Hovland. Now, also, Wolf's teammate. So these guys played on the same college team. Victor's 21 years old. He's just turned pro, having a top 10 finish in the US Open as an amateur. Final round 68 at Pebble Beach. Exceptionally good performance. He's just finished 13th and 13th in the last two events, with a 65 and a 64 for his last rounds. So Victor, although he's doing some pretty amazing things, having just moved into the pro ranks, he's being outshined by Matt. And to outshine what Victor's doing right now is something else.
Yeah.
That is right, yes.
It's quite something. And Victor Hovland, you know, he's not far off securing his card already in those few starts. But with with Victor the way that he is now, he seems to have a lot of personality. He seems to be able to move the ball both ways. He's got a little second gear in his swing too. When he wants to crank up an extra 20 yards, he kind of stops his backswing at the very top and he continues it on another extra frames to crank a little bit more shoulder turn and move more speed into the ball. And this is mid-swing at 120 miles an hour. So this guy has got no fear whatsoever. And like I say,
is that not the kind of thing you try coach out of someone?
It's the sort of thing you do in a practice round.
Yeah.
Because you're just trying something. But maybe he's tried it before. But he pulled it out mid-round. Second event as a professional.
Yeah.
And they put it on social media as they do now. And this thing's getting retweeted around. And people are commenting on how incredible it is for somebody to do that. Because I don't think we've ever seen that happen in golf before. Never seen anyone stop their backswing at the top, purposely extend it a few frames on and then deliver more speed. Well, it's just a phenomenal thing.
Yeah, well, obviously it's working for him. And at the same time, I bet you he's not that upset about kind of slightly going under the radar because of it.
He's got to bide his time, isn't he? Because he's playing great stuff. And Matt's just off the charts with what he's doing at the moment. So I think he's going to bide his time. But his results have been exceptional.
Yeah.
Top 10 at Pebble. 13th, and he's got a big season ahead of him as well. You know, Matt actually, interestingly, hasn't qualified for the Open. He'll be back in action this week, as we're going to talk about later on in the John Deere Classic. There's still an open spot for him, whereas Victor will be playing. So they've got a great season ahead of them, and I think there's two future Ryder Cuppers there, but obviously playing against each other.
Mm. Yeah. Look, Jeremy, we're going to have to let you go in a moment, but I want to know what you're up to over the next week. Please try top a Jack Nicklaus story, please.
It's not quite that. I've got some coaching to do in Scotland this week, and then I've got to give a couple of exhibitions, actually. One at Royal Liverpool, which will be rather nice. That's an Open Championship venue, of course, and they're having their 125th anniversary this year, so I'll be there at the weekend. And also a show at a local club to me, Cotswold Hills, so I look forward to visiting there. So, good week lined up, and And then after that, I'll be off to San Francisco. So, yeah, it doesn't stop.
It's not bad at all. Is it? Are you going back in the studio as well next week?
I will be, absolutely, yes.
All right,
I look forward to seeing you.
Top man, Jeremy, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
There we are. Listen to the golf show here on Love Sport. As I said, we're going to let Jeremy go now. But up next, after the break, myself and Tom, we're going to go through the rest of the big topics from the week. We'll head to the John Deere Classic and also talk about that Scottish Open.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Yeah, welcome back to Love Sport. It's the golf show. Myself and Tom Reid in the studio. We've just had Jeremy on for the last 45 minutes. Live the high life. So, I mean, you both do by the sounds of things.
It's been good recently.
Yeah. I mean, is it always like this? Was it Vegas the other week? He's in Lisbon.
No.
Yes, I just realised I said nearly Vegas the other week.
Oh, the memories. He's brought it all up again.
I didn't do that on purpose.
Don't get me out of my flow here. But no,
did you talk
it's
about
not.
This last week?
Yes,
you
we did.
Okay, and, so this doesn't need to happen.
Johnny and Jeremy hammered me, and rightfully so. It was good for the banter.
I won't.
Weeks aren't always like this. There's always stuff going on, but. You know, meeting Jack Nicklaus, once in a lifetime thing. Next week, I'm not going to have an exciting story. Well, I might. You never know.
Yeah,
you never know.
Don't say that. We want people to listen next week. Oh, I've got nothing exciting to talk about next week.
Absolutely nothing.
Right, okay. John Deere Classic. Let's talk about that then, shall we? Let's start looking ahead now. We've done the 3M. We've done the Irish Open looking back. Let's look ahead.
Absolutely. And there's one Open Championship qualification spot left. And we're hoping that Matt Wolf's going to go and grab that straight off his win at the 3M Open. And, you know, John Deere is an older event. It first started in 1972. And it was quite famous, actually, for having the first female golfer invited to a PGA Tour event with Michelle Wee 14 years ago in 2005. So it got a lot of press there. It's a beautiful golf course, par 71. Course yard is there at 7,257. A little bit in the splat golf category. So I think we're going to see some birdies on this one. Winning score there has been up to 27 under par. But being the week before the Open, a lot of the American players who are qualified for the Open, the higher ranked players, want to get themselves over to Europe. Some of them are competing in Scotland. Some of them are taking the time to get used to the time difference as well, obviously. And there's only one player ranked in the top 50 in the world competing, which is Kevin Na.
Okay.
So it should be an interesting event. Obviously, we've got the size story of the Open qualification spot. We've had some dramatics over the years. Jordan Spieth picked up his first win there, holding a 30-yard bunker shot, bounced once, hit the top of the flag and dropped in, which secured him his first win and spot in an Open Championship. So I think it's going to be an exciting week and definitely expect birdies.
So Matt Wolf is very much going for that last one. I mean, you mentioned there's not a huge amount of top-seeded players or ranked players heading to it. So will he go in it as one of the favourites? Yeah.
It's crazy to think. He will. I mean, he's going to be in one of the marquee groups because everybody wants to see him play. I mean, I put a post up about him when he turned pro about a couple of months ago because I was really excited to watch him compete on the PGA Tour. He's so refreshing, loads of power. I mean, he's hoofing up tee boxes. His feet move so much that he's actually ruining the grass on the tee box. So he's just an exciting player to watch. And yeah, I'll be tuning in to watch it just for him, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, so other than him, is there anyone kind of really of particular note that people want to watch?
Yeah, I think Kevin Na is probably your main man. He's had some great form this year. He's a superb player. I know that he's one of the slower players on tour, but that doesn't stop him from getting his job done. Kevin Na, for me, definitely the favourite. He's had form around that course. Lovely golf swing and definitely one of the guys that's going to be in the mix on Sunday afternoon.
So what is the reason for it being a particularly weak field? Why are people not, you know, clamouring to be playing at this tournament?
You know, I think it offers an opportunity for the guys that are lower down the rankings and the guys that don't have the best rankings or categories on the tour to move in and play in one of these events. Because, listen, it's still a big event. $6 million prize fund.
Yeah.
You know,
just 6 million quid.
Just six million.
And most of them don't fancy it.
No, amazing, right? Yeah. And I think, listen, a lot of the guys are going over. We've got Justin Thomas playing over in the Scottish Open, which is really cool. One of the big American players. He's been fantastic. He was one of the only Americans that actually came over to France to play in the French Open prior to the Le Golf National Ryder Cup. So he was one of the guys that knew the course as well because he was willing to travel. And it seems that he's going to be doing that again. And I think also, you know, like I said before, Ricky Fowler's going to be in the field. He's a Scottish Open champion at Gullen before. He will be trying to get himself links ready. basically for the British Open. So for the guys that are competitive for the major championships, they'll skip the John Deere, get themselves over to Europe and get themselves used to our temperatures and ready to play.
Yeah, so I mean, how much does the role kind of play in terms of the temperatures of coming over from those sunnier climates of playing wonderful golf out in America to then be playing it in the UK? Does it make a massive difference? I'd imagine it probably would. Well, I mean, I don't know why, but I'm sure it would.
I mean, if they're from the warmer states, you know, California, Florida and so on, they're going to be used to some nice temperatures. But the Americans
have... It's not about putting a sweater on, is it? It's actually the way it would affect your game, is it not?
Definitely. Yardage is going to be a big deal. I mean, a lot colder, the ball's not going to go as far. Mm. Obviously, it's a completely different style of golf, as Jeremy said earlier. When the ball lands, it rolls, it runs off, it gets a bounce left, it gets a bounce right. It's a different style of golf. The temperature's not going to be an issue for these guys. It's how used to, you know, controlling their ball. Can they bring the flight of their ball down? Can they work it both ways? What's their lag putting like? How good is their shot selection around the greens? What's their skill level like from 30 yards when they've got to run the ball? So I think that, you know, these guys need to get themselves kind of Open Championship ready. It's a totally different challenge to the some of the normal golf courses on the PGA Tour. And moving into that, obviously looking ahead, we have the Scottish Open, which is held at the very posh and very classy Renaissance Resort, which is...
Have you played it?
Do you know what? I was there recently a few weeks ago.
Here he goes.
No, I was... we drove in. And we had a look around and we drove out.
Are you sure you drove in or did nobody drive you in?
No, nobody drove. Actually, Jack invited me. We had a cup of tea and a bacon butty together,
yeah,
me and
a
Jack.
A quick round.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's a pretty special place. And, you know, it's tucked between Muirfield and North Berwick, which are two of the greatest links courses in the world. And it takes a certain amount of confidence, I think, to develop a piece of land tucked between those two courses. It was owned, you know, by a wealthy American by the name of Jerry Savardi, and he pulled out all the stops to get the job done. It's a Tom Doak design. It's actually an interesting... It's a traditional links setup, but there's undulating fairways, there's some holes in the woodland, and then they've got some newer holes which are out in the ocean. So it's not pure authentic links, but I think it's some kind of preparation for the players. It's certainly not far away. So I think that's going to be an interesting event. Rory McIlroy back in action. He spent the week up at Portrush getting himself ready for the Open Championship, which is going to be, you know, for me, he's the favourite along with Brooks Koepka. We've got Ricky Fowler, Ian Poulter, Henrik Stenson, Matt Fitzpatrick, Ernie Els, and Lee Westwood, who are all playing. Unusually, actually, Mickelson sitting this one out. Mickelson is a past Scottish Open champion, loves the charm of links golf, usually makes himself links ready for the Open, but this time round he's not. He's taken the week off to rest, spend time with his family. So it's a star-studded field on a golf course that I'm excited to see. And I'm sure it's going to provide us with a fantastic winner.
Yeah, so Mickelson, a links specialist, spoke earlier on about John as well, John Rahm being a links specialist. I mean, who else kind of can we expect to see perhaps at the Scottish Open, you know, who this suits, these courses?
Well, I mean, you know, you've got your Francesco Molinari's. I mean, he's going to spend some time resting going into the Open Championship. You know, he won at Carnoustie in such amazing fashion. He barely missed a shot. And he was the same at Augusta through about 65 holes of the championship, barely missed a shot. So it would be stupid of us to look past Molinari. I think another guy that we really need to look for that I think is going to have a fantastic major is Brooks Koepka.
Yeah.
And on that subject, actually, Brooks was criticised this week because he had a very average finish, tied for 50th at the 3M Open. And he's won twice as many major championships as he has won regular tour events. Now, first golfer in history to ever be criticised for not performing in regular tour events, only in major championships. So I've compiled...
Yeah, I mean, it's always the other way around, isn't it? Not turning up at the big ones.
Exactly. And that just
how
to me
is... How did he respond to that? Did he respond to that? Has he yet? Or is it? Or are we all just at the moment just kind of baffled by the fact that that's been levelled at him?
He took it on the chin. And he said, listen, I'm trying when I go to these events. But obviously, he's a guy that plays well on motivation. He plays with a chip on his shoulder. Mm. And also, you know, he was left out of the advertising prior to Pebble Beach. And this is a guy that's going for a hat-trick of US Opens. Next year, he goes for a hat-trick of US PGAs. And I've called him the major monster for the last years. But I thought to myself, how many guys out there would love to have the title of that? And I've gone with Lee Westwood, Colin Montgomery, Ricky Fowler, Luke Donald and Ian Poulter. Now, Lee Westwood has won 43 tournaments worldwide and not a major. Monty has won 53 tournaments worldwide and not a major. There are some guys out there that have won huge amounts of regular tour events, but winning the major championship is one of the hardest ones.
Of course it is, yeah.
And my mate, the Golden Bear Jack, he said that they were the easiest ones to win because all you had to do was just wait for people to make bogeys and he'd float along with his pars and win them. So Brooks Koepka is going to be in the mix at Portrush, that's for sure.
All right, perfect. Well, look, Tom, we'll have to leave it there this evening. Absolute pleasure doing this golf show with you this evening. You and Jeremy will be back at the same time next week.
This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.